It was a chilly afternoon on an official humanitarian mission in Lower Manhattan at the Xavier Mission on 15th Street. The usual, this busy community kitchen feeds the hungry by the hundreds each week. There are clothing donations to sort, a shelter for men, and caring for the occasional injured person.
So someone has a boo-boo.
I hurt myself in soccer.
That's 3-year-old Rian, one of the children volunteering along with adults and some refugees from the Middle East and South Asia, volunteering to clean and scrub this vast dining hall.
How come she gets
Oh, that's a good question. He wants to know why she gets an apron and can help clean and he can't.
I think you can have an apron.
You want an apron?
No.
Rian and her older brother Declan are having a dispute that some impromptu diplomacy only partly resolves. The diplomat here is also their mom, and she's used to dealing with recalcitrant Russians and irate Iranians. But on this Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Day, U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Samantha Power, is trying to give her kids a lesson in what it's like outside the Obama administration power matrix.
For an Irish immigrant to be living in the Waldorf Astoria is, you know, I had trouble getting used to it. My kids did not.
Yeah. Isn't that funny how that works?
Yeah. I'm trying more and more to bring them into a little bit
more
of what's actually happening in the real world.
Samantha Power, Rian, and Declan, welcome to the real world.
Hi, my name's Andy.
Hi, good to meet you, Andy.
Good to meet
Samantha.
You. So you and your crew,
yeah.
We're going to have you helping cleaning up here. I don't know how much you've been told already.
Right.
This hall is used for the St. Francis Xavier Meal Service every Sunday for about 33 years. So yesterday we served 1,506 meals.
Wow.
Andy Lipman from the Coalition Against Hunger hands out bottles of bluish glass cleaner, and the ambassador and her young staff get to work scrubbing.
Hey, look down here. See the dirt? We need you to wash that off. Can you go a little harder with your little hand? Bravo.
I can do it.
You can do it without your mom. Okay, see the dirt right here? This is what you want to get off. But wait, here's a little spray. There you go.
This is fun. I can see my reflection in it now.
The symbolism of this team of workers goes considerably beyond simple fun, though. Among the volunteers are several refugees from Syria, including some young doctors. They were not comfortable giving us their names because they have families still in war-torn Syria. But they feel very comfortable and welcome here in the United States.
United States will give me the opportunity to be a good man, a successful doctor, and I will continue to work hard until I achieve my dream.
This doctor's dream is to succeed here in America, to be reunited with his family, far from a nation that would have forced him into the army to face ISIS and other killer insurgents. He just wants peace, and is happy to explain that to anyone, even a Muslim-banning billionaire.
I all invite Donald Trump to come to my house and visit me.
You really are inviting Donald Trump to your house?
Yes, he can. I have one
bedroom.
Be careful.
Be careful what you wish for. He'll come.
Yes, he can come. And they will know that our life is funny. We'll live normal life like all other people.
The humanitarian workers here at the Xavier Mission understand that normal life is the goal of these refugees, not some bloody Islamist utopia. U.S. Ambassador Samantha Power believes, despite the rhetoric of campaign headlines, most Americans understand that, too.
I think all across the country, my sense is that there are communities stepping up in huge ways. I mean, this has been going on for decades, that families across America are opening their doors, you know, delivering their toys and their hand-me-down clothes and their books to new families who are coming. The stipend that the U.S. government gives is enough to get a family through some number of months, but fundamentally it's the communities that have stepped up that have made it possible for so many families over the years to get resettled. The challenge is that a lot of what is happening and what families are doing to make refugees feel welcome is not very visible. What's visible are what people say in debates or sound bites. And I know in talking to some number of families who are newly resettled, they're kind of stunned at the rhetoric and hurt by it. So I think our job, in addition to actually reaching out and engaging refugees that are trying to resettle, is also to lift up the examples of communities who are opening their doors in order to offset, you know, some of the noise that is out there.
Is that disconnect part of the bigger theme of your tenure at the United Nations, in the sense that one of the things you've learned in your long career is that sometimes local entities have an enormous amount of power, maybe more power than national governments that you criticized so much in the beginning of your career?
Well, I think a couple things. I mean, public policy is about people. So what I feel a responsibility to do whenever I can is to engage with real individuals who are affected by real policies, and certainly also those affected by rhetoric as well. And it's too easy, I think, to just be out there saying, hey, refugees are welcome, or on the other side, refugees are not welcome. One has to actually get to know these families and these people and listen to them. Pope Francis, I thought, had a very memorable line in his speech before the Congress where he said, see their faces. You know, if they become just numbers, then whether you're inside the Situation Room or you're outside on some stump, you know, trying to whip people's fears, they're just abstractions. And so what's consistent, certainly in my career, is no matter what whether I was a journalist or a human rights advocate or now in government, is you just got to go talk to people and hear how they're doing and what they're confronting. And then if you can, do your part to try to make it a little bit easier for them. They've been through enough. I mean, if you're a Syrian and you've come to this country, it's almost guaranteed that you have really close family members who are living under horrific conditions still in Syria. It's almost guaranteed that your story of flight was unimaginable. You know, whether it's dodging bullets or the extreme cold or the worry that you weren't going to be able to feed your kids or the worry that you were going to get kicked out of a neighboring country, every one of the stories that these people have to tell is you know, a reminder of what they've gone through and just how desperate they were to find safe ground and how grateful they are to the United States for having offered that to them.
Finally, because it's unavoidable, are your days number? Are you looking at the end of this really pretty crucial stint in your life story?
Well, I am focused on the fourth quarter of President Obama's fourth quarter, the second half of the fourth quarter now, I guess it is. And we have a lot to do, as I think you heard in the State of the Union. We are only going to get more ambitious as the clock ticks and we head toward January of 2017. Every job I've done in government, I've come in with a list of things to do, and I think Syria is certainly something that stands out as being one of the most horrific situations in the world. And so this being here and meeting people who are from Syria, who have family members in Syria who are themselves donating their time and their service to give back to American communities, it's just another reminder again of our responsibility to them.
Ambassador Power, thank you so much.
Thank you, John.
U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Samantha Power. She may be settling down after this stint in the Obama cabinet. She says there will be time to reflect on the meaning of her tenure at the U.N., but there is still much to do right now. Dealing with North Korea and Cuba, close to the top of her list. Close to the bottom, but undoubtedly a significant challenge, although she didn't mention it, explaining to her 3 and 6-year-olds why they have to move out of the Waldorf Astoria.